Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida legislature is struggling to get back on track to crafting a budget both chambers can agree on, while disagreement continues in Tallahassee.
The chairman of appropriations and the president of the Senate need to grow up.
Also tonight, a bill in the House would look to allow workers' compensation for first responders suffering from PTSD.
In the wake of what has just happened in Parkland, I am devastated for our first responders because I am worried for their mental health safety right now.
We'll also hear from those who are pushing to make texting while driving a primary traffic offense in Florida, as well as those who would like local governments to have the power to ban smoking in public parks. 1 week and 2 days left to go in the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. A week after one chamber of the Florida legislature accused the other of stonewalling, both sides are coming together to do the one thing that must be done each year, which is pass a budget. Lynn Hatter reports lawmakers are starting to lay the groundwork for bringing the legislative session in for a landing on time.
This is the sound of the legislature's airplane landing gear coming down.
The Budget Conference Committee will come to order. Senator Bradley, you're recognized for a motion.
I move to nominate Representative Trujillo to serve as chair of the budget conference.
That's House Budget Chairman Carlos Trujillo and Senate Budget Chair Rob Bradley. And this is how the beginning of the end starts for the legislature, in joint conference committees like this one, where the two sides iron out the differences in their respective budget plans. The conferences are getting underway after House Speaker Richard Corcoran expressed frustration last week with what he felt was a lack of movement.
We talk to them all the time. We communicate with them all the time. They just need to, the chairman of appropriations and the president of the Senate need to grow up.
But House Budget Chairman Carlos Trujillo says the shooting at a South Florida high school has changed everything.
I think post-Parkland, talking to the senators, talking to the House, I think everybody's in a position that there are things that are much bigger than us, much bigger than the Senate, much bigger than the House, much bigger for our state.
It's also shaken up the state's budgetary picture. Lawmakers are planning to spend a whopping $500 million for programs that will comprise their response to the Parkland shooting. And that means other areas of the budget will be cut down to make room. The Senate had been hoping to spare the state's Affordable Housing Trust Fund, but Senate Budget Chief Bradley says the trust fund will be swept. A planned tax cut package will be pared down as well, and the state will put a smaller amount of money into its savings account.
We had to go from 1.2 to 1.0 billion on the working capital fund. That's not something we wanted to do, but it's something that was necessary.
Also getting squeezed out, the members' special projects often sprinkled throughout the budget. Meanwhile, there are still other big-ticket items pending, repairing damages from Hurricane Irma and fighting a growing epidemic of opioid abuse. In addition, the House and Senate are working out the details of two key education policy bills that are the priorities of their respective leaders. The Senate has put language that could curtail the power of teachers' unions back into an omnibus House bill supported by House Speaker Richard Corcoran, and the House has advanced a higher education package backed by Senate President Joe Negron. House Budget Chairman Trujillo says the budget subcommittees will meet through Thursday to iron out changes in different areas. Unresolved issues get bumped up to full conference committees starting Friday, and what's left over goes to the House and Senate leaders.
Bump to chairs at 10:30 a.m. on Friday. Bump to presiding officers at 10:30 a.m. 10:30, I believe it might be a.m. or a.m. on Sunday. and the bill will be on the desk an estimated of Tuesday morning.
Once a budget hits the desks of lawmakers, it has a 72-hour cooling-off period. In that time, lawmakers can review and propose changes before a final vote can be taken. That vote is expected to happen next Friday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
It is standard protocol for police, firefighters, and paramedics to run toward danger. Over time, that can take a toll on the mental health of first responders. Now, a measure in Florida's legislature is focusing on protecting first responders who experience PTSD as a result of such a stressful job. Andrew Quintana reports.
Megan Villa is the sister of firefighter Steve Ledoux. He committed suicide in September after witnessing 29 years of horrific crime scenes. Villa says it could have been prevented had his claim for workers' compensation been taken seriously.
And my brother did take his life. My brother did file a workers' comp claim, and he was denied after 2 months.
She spoke in support of a proposal that would provide workers' compensation for first responders suffering from specific cases of post-traumatic stress disorder. Villa believes it finally addresses an issue that often goes unreported.
We lose many firefighters to suicide. The year my brother died, we lost 7. He's a person. He had a life. And the year before that, we lost 12 in the state of Florida. I'm talking to state of Florida. We lose way more firefighters to suicide than we do in the line of duty. In 2016, David Dangerfield, he was a captain, or he was a chief, he committed suicide. Richard Sandell, who is actually from Parkland, committed suicide. We can prevent this from happening.
Current workers' compensation laws require employers to pay for both medical and wage replacements if the employee suffers from a physical injury that arises from assigned work. Mental or nervous injuries that do not have a physical injury attached to them are not covered. Orlando Democratic Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith says this is part of a systemic issue. One of his closest friends, Angel Colon, was a victim of the Pulse nightclub shooting. The officer who rescued him, Omar Delgado, couldn't continue his work after the traumatic experience and was eventually fired.
Omar Delgado saw him as one of the only bodies on the dance floor that still had signs of life, and he pulled him off the dance floor and saved him. Now Officer Delgado, as of December 31st, 2017, was terminated from his employment with the City of Eatonville Police Department because of his condition.
The proposed measure would cover mental injuries like PTSD, regardless of any accompanying physical injury for first responders. It also requires employers provide mental health awareness training and treatment. But only specific death-related traumas qualify. First responders who witness and are traumatized by the death of a child, a homicide, and a victim who has suffered grievous bodily harm will be covered. St. Petersburg Democratic Representative Wenge Newton hopes this eventually leads to covering retired first responders.
These kind of things, a lot of people don't want to recognize or acknowledge because of what it might cost. But look at the cost to the families after these individuals have gone on and retired and have so many years of seeing ungodly things that we probably would never want to see or either witness.
The bill heads to the floor after passing its final committee unanimously. This comes after the Florida League of Cities dropped its opposition to the measure. Its companion bill in the Senate has one more committee before heading to the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Andrew Quintana.
Before we tell you the next story, we will warn you that there are some pretty graphic descriptions that were included in the language for this bill, so we thought you ought to know that before you listen to this. This will be done in about a minute if you want to tune out. A bill that would restrict the most common type of second trimester abortion was getting ready for a final vote in the Florida House of Representatives today. The chamber teeing up the measure, which would impose new restrictions on doctors performing dilation and evacuation abortions, in which a woman's cervix is dilated and the fetus removed in pieces. The procedure, known by opponents as a dismemberment abortion, would be prohibited unless the heart of the fetus is stopped first, either by the injection of a drug or by severing the umbilical cord. The bill would allow an exemption when a woman's life is in danger and if no other medical procedures would suffice. Doctors who violate the law could be charged with a third-degree felony, which carries a prison sentence of up to 5 years and fines of up to $5,000. The bill has drawn criticism from abortion rights supporters who say this type of second trimester abortion is sometimes the only option available. Even if approved by the House later in the week, though, the legislation seems unlikely to become law this year. With just a week and a half remaining in the 2018 lawmaking session, a similar bill in the Senate has yet to be heard by any committee. Still to come on Capitol Report, as the end of session clock ticks ever louder in Tallahassee, those who want texting while driving to be a more serious traffic offense are hopeful their bills will pass before time runs out.
These people may be staying in their lane and going the speed limit, but they're still putting our children and other drivers at risk.
Cities could have more of a say over whether parks are open to tobacco use. That's under a bill scheduled for a hearing on the Senate floor tomorrow.
While smoking is restricted at the three professional football stadiums in Florida, current state law still allows smoking on the sidelines of local youth football games.
And despite pleas from Dozier Reform School survivors, bills to further help them may be dead for this legislative session.
The brutality, the physical, the mental, the sexual abuse was rampant at that school. Use your heart as parents and support this bill.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
This week has been a wrenching emotional experience at the Florida Capitol. In the aftermath of the Broward County school shootings, students and parents hammered lawmakers with stories of young lives ended far too soon, along with pleas that something be done to stop future deaths. Today, on the steps of the historic old Capitol, there were more stories from friends and family members whose loved ones have died, but not in a hail of bullets, rather because of negligence behind the wheel. One of those stories came from Emily Slossberg. She recalled what she said after the fatal 1996 crash to her father, Irving.
I don't want to go on. How can I live without my twin sister, Dory? And so he says to me, it's what we do after a tragedy that determines whether it remains just a tragedy.
Irving Slossberg, a Democrat, would go on to represent the family's Palm Beach County District in the Florida legislature on and off between 2000 and 2012. While in the House, he pushed to make driving without a seatbelt a primary traffic offense in Florida.
We started off with a baby step with the seatbelt bill for minors. And then, 5 years later, we got it for everyone. So we started off here with the secondary offense for no texting. It's the right time. It takes, things in Tallahassee go very slowly.
Today, Slossberg's daughter Emily occupies the House seat her dad used to have. She's also battling for a change in Florida's traffic laws.
Texting while driving is an incredibly dangerous behavior, and it is an epidemic on our roadways. Everybody does it. 92% of people admit to doing it in Florida.
Assistant Florida Secretary of Transportation Brian Blanchard agrees this will be a steep hill to climb.
We have to look at changing the culture here. Smartphone use is reported to have increased over 200%. That's from 2010 to 2016.
Although that hill may not be quite so daunting in the Florida House this year. That chamber's bill to make texting while driving a primary offense, meaning law officers could pull over motorists without needing any other reason, has a stunning 60 co-sponsors. The House is expected to pass the bill tomorrow. One of the 60 House bill sponsors, Jackie Toledo, says that's great because current distracted driving laws are not enough to get people to stop texting.
The reason this bill is necessary is for people who claim they are professional texters. These people may be staying in their lane and going the speed limit, but they're still putting our children and other drivers at risk.
But there are also those who have concerns about the bill. Those include Democrat Al Jaquet of Delray Beach. He's concerned that the bill could increase the chances that minorities will be racially profiled by law enforcement.
This gives them another reason to pull people over. Have you considered the potential unintended consequences?
In the Senate, the bill has yet to be heard by the Appropriations Committee, where the chairman has indicated he does not plan to take up the bill due to privacy concerns for those who may be pulled over. Even so, the bill's Senate sponsor, Keith Perry, Republican from Gainesville, says he remains optimistic.
We have a priority, and we feel like we're on a mission. And we're on a mission because of you. We're on a mission because of the parents. That gives me drive. We get up here, there's lots of distractions, there's lots of things that we have to deal with. They're all important issues. I think this is one of the most important fundamental issues that we can deal with.
And for Irv Schlossberg, whose determination is perhaps matched only by his patience, hope continues to spring eternal.
It's just a negotiation between the House and the Senate. That's it. I really don't. I believe that this bill's going to go.
Much has been made this session about efforts by Florida lawmakers to take power away from local governments, but Regan McCarthy reports a measure is scheduled for a discussion on the Senate floor Thursday that would expand local control, in this case, when it comes to tobacco use.
Right now, decisions about where smoking is allowed are left up to the state, but Senator Debbie Mayfield wants local governments to decide whether people should be allowed to smoke in public parks.
This bill gives authority to the municipalities and the counties to further restrict smoking within the boundaries of any public park that they own. They will have the ability to establish smoking-free areas and smoking permitted areas within those boundaries.
Pediatrician Barry Hummel supports Mayfield's proposal. He says the current law doesn't make sense.
Under the current Florida Clean Indoor Air Act, cities and counties throughout Florida cannot restrict smoking on publicly owned property, including parks, playgrounds, and athletic fields. So while smoking is restricted at the three professional football stadiums in Florida, current state law still allows smoking on the sidelines of local youth football games.
Hummel says secondhand smoke is dangerous, even when outside. But there's another reason he says he wants local governments to have more ability to limit smoking in public places.
The second reason is more important to me as a pediatrician. Studies have shown that the single biggest factor influencing a teenager's decision to start smoking is seeing other individuals smoke. Public smoking actually increases the chances that youth in your communities will choose to use tobacco. By restricting public smoking, communities can actually reduce the rate of youth tobacco use locally.
St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis says he understands the desire to protect kids from secondhand smoke, but he has expressed some concerns the measure could go too far.
My concern, again, is that this is overly broad and that we're saying all public spaces may be available to be non-smoking, and that's, you know, while I understand people have different views on smoking, the last thing I want is some person harassing somebody who's perfectly minding their own business, you know, a thousand feet away from the next person.
But Mayfield says a smoking ban would not be allowed to expand willy-nilly. She says her legislation applies specifically to parks, and she says there's a definition for that.
And the definition of the park, according to 775.215, it means all public and private property specifically designated as being used for recreational purposes and where children regularly congregate.
Meanwhile, David Cullen with the Sierra Club says the measure is self-governing because the public would push back if local governments created rules that are too stringent.
This is a case of letting the market operate. If cities were to do that, and if all of the smokers in the city were sufficiently unhappy, they would leave and deprive the city of its tax base.
While Mayfield's measure is moving forward in the Senate, it does not appear to have traction in the House. The measure has not yet been heard in that chamber. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Let's see what other legislation is moving in the House and Senate. Here's Bob Brooks with our sister operation, the Florida Channel.
Senate Bill 296, which repeals provisions relating to limitation on the size of individual wine and cider containers, which had gotten a favorable nod from Commerce and Tourism and, with a committee substitute, regulated industries, has now been placed on the agenda for consideration of the Senate Rules Committee tomorrow before possibly heading for the floor for debate. A similar bill in the House, House Bill 669, is scheduled for debate on the floor of the House tomorrow. Passing the full Senate and now heading to the House is Senate Bill 100, which deletes fees for adding the word veteran to an ID card or driver's license. Also, Senate Bill 440, which creates the Florida Veterans Care Program in the Department of Veterans Affairs. This bill authorizes the department to negotiate with federal agencies to seek federal funding and prohibits the use of state funds to support the program. It passed the Senate and is now headed for the House. Across the rotunda in the House chambers, House Bill 7083 extends the number of days Red Cross workers would be allowed to take leave from their state jobs for disaster relief work. That increase would go from 15 to 20 days. The bill is ready for a final House vote. Both houses have passed House Bill 75, and it is now headed for the governor for his signature. This bill authorizes Florida college system institutions to waive some post-secondary fees for active duty armed forces members who are using military tuition assistance. From the Florida Channel, this is Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, with no traction in the Florida House, a bill aiming to help those who say they survived abuse at the infamous Dozier School for Boys appears to be dead. Sasha Cordner reports.
As a teenager in the 1950s, Bryant Middleton, a veteran, was sent to the Dozier School for Boys in Marianna.
My name is Captain Bryant E. Middleton, U.S. Army Ranger, retired. I served our country for more than 20 years in peacetime, and I fought in the jungles of Vietnam as part of the Army's long-range reconnaissance patrol. I am a survivor. I'm a survivor of Dozier, the Florida School for Boys.
Over the course of a decade, many like Middleton have tried to share their stories with politicians about the physical and sexual abuses they suffered at the hands of staffers at the North Florida Reform School and its sister campus in Okeechobee. Others did not survive and for decades were believed to be buried in unmarked graves on the Dozier grounds until some remains were uncovered by researchers a few years ago.
I came here to Tallahassee 10 years ago with three other men just to simply ask the governor to look into this. And since then, committee members such as yourself have stood up and said enough is enough with abuse toward children.
Speaking to lawmakers during a committee hearing last month, Middleton asked them to continue their legislative efforts to support White House boys like him and other survivors. A so-called White House building on the Dozier property is where many of the boys say the abuse occurred.
I don't come here to speak about the brutality, the physical, the mental, the sexual abuse, which was rampant at that school. I come to speak to you as a father and a grandfather. I have 15 grandchildren. Were one of those children mine? I assure you I wouldn't be standing here. But all I ask of you is to use your heart as parents and support this bill.
St. Petersburg Democratic Senator Daryl Rusan says a bill he's carrying builds on past efforts by the legislature over the past couple years to bring closure to victims' families and survivors of the reform school.
2 years ago, Senator Joyner and Representative Ed Narain filed a bill that created a reinterment fund, $500,000 to those families of the deceased boys whose bones were found at Dozier by University of South Florida. And discovered. And it allowed families to apply for up to $7,500 to reinter these young boys in the place of their choice.
And Rusan says last year the legislature then went a step further.
The next session, both chambers recognized these atrocities and apologized to those men who were boys and suffered through this We apologize to them for the atrocities and promise them that nothing like this would ever happen again while young men, young boys, were in state custody.
Now Rouson has a new bill he filed for the 2018 legislative session.
This bill allows a registry, allows us to identify those who are yet living. And it would be for a future legislature to determine whether or not it becomes a claims bill, whether or not we do something more further for them, whether we pay it forward in terms of scholarships for their children, or something like that. So this bill only seeks to identify those who are still living with these injuries, both psychological and physical.
Representing the Holland and Knight law firm, former Republican Governor Bob Martinez called it a great bill. He's been working with the White House boys to get a lot of Dozier bills across the finish line.
The apology that was given to those who were at Dozier and Okeechobee during this time period is greatly acknowledged by all. I think what this would do is it would make the apology almost to the individual instead of the institutions. We know about Dozier, we know about Okeechobee, but we don't know the names necessarily of those who were there. And I think this goes a long way to putting a face on what you've already done in terms of acknowledging that the state did not act rightfully back in that period of time.
The bill has so far passed two Senate committees, and it still has one more committee stop to go before it heads to the floor. But since it has not been taken up in any House committees, Kim Kaye says it appears unlikely the bill will go anywhere in the less than 2 weeks left of this legislative session. She, too, is with Holland and Knight.
I think that what we're going to do is regroup after session, meet with our bill sponsors, Senator Rouson and Representative Tracy Davis, to see if there's perhaps another way to do it. We set it up as a certification process through Department of Juvenile Justice, but we're happy to see if there's another path. And I think it's important, from the boys that have talked to us, that they'd love to continue to pursue something next year. And whether it's a claims bill or another type of certification process, I think we'll be examining that and we'll probably go forward.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Kortner, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. We also thank Andrew Quintana and our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes, offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.